Venerable Bhikkhus, brothers and sisters, the topic of my discourse today is Samadhi. What is Samadhi? Samadhi is concentration of the mind or bringing the mind to one-pointedness. If that is the object of Samadhi, what is the condition of the normal mind? The normal mind is a scattered mind, always busily engaged in, while you are awake, to catch objects that attract the sense bases and create a thought. If there are no sense objects, at least it would create a thought by way of thinking, creating on its own the thought of reference to a past incident or something which you expect to perform in the future. In other words, there is no period when the mind is at rest in an ordinary whirling. From the time he wakes up in the morning up to the time he goes to sleep, his mind is always in movement, scattered. Now when something is scattered like that, even if it is a force, like let's say water or air or fire or anything like that, when it is scattered, it doesn't produce the strength it can produce when it is concentrated. When a force is concentrated, there is much force created there. When it is scattered, it doesn't produce that strength in the force. The best example I can give you is, there is the sunshine. Children are in the habit of holding a mirror, a piece of glass, and concentrating the energy produced by the rays of the sun to one-pointedness. And what happens is, that area where the rays of the sun reflects on the glass, it directly pierces the glass and then gets concentrated at one point. Within a short time you find a fire rises there. One would ask the question, how did this fire rise there? In the energy there is that ability to create a fire, but once the energy is spread, scattered, then that it cannot produce a fire as if it would have created a fire when it is concentrated. So the piece of glass helped to concentrate the rays of the sun to one spot, and then there arises a fire as a result. That clearly indicates even the energy produced by the sun in the rays, it's, once it is scattered, you only feel a certain amount of discomfort. Because of the heat, the bodily discomfort would create sometimes perspiration, that sort of thing. Other than that, it doesn't create a fire to burn you. But the same rays, when it is spread, does not harm you so much, could be very harmful if that fire, if that ray is concentrated at one point in the way of creating a fire. Likewise, your mind is scattered always, never fixed at one point, always trying to catch some object through a sense base to create a thought. As a result, it hasn't the strength. It could only observe things on the surface, accept what is shown on the surface, and you believe what is shown on the surface by the mind. That's the way of the worldling. But you are trying to practice the philosophy of Buddha, where Buddha shows you a different aspect of life, which you and I believe as true. That which is displayed outside, on the surface, we now know, are not the truth. They are merely a deception. There is impermanence everywhere. Everything is changing from one condition to another, which science has now accepted. But if I ask you the question, does any of your sense bases display such change in any object that is seen by you or you are in contact with? No. They all appear before us as permanent things. And as worldlings, we have accepted that which has been shown to us as permanent, not being aware that they are defined. The truth of the matter is that there is nothing on this earth that is constant but always subject to change. That's the philosophy. So there is the deception created on one side, there is the truth revealed by Buddha on the other side. and which also have been approved by science now, which we like to appreciate, understand and realize the truth. We do not want to accept what is not true, because it is a deception. Any average intelligent man would have that choice of appreciating what is realistic and not what is created as a deception. So now what you are expected to do is prepare your mind to understand the truth. How do you prepare your mind to understand the truth? As I emphasized earlier, so long as your mind is scattered, this scattered mind hasn't the ability to show you the true state of things. It creates only a deception and you are expected to accept it on the surface. Therefore, to create the ability in your mind to see something through, something not found on the surface, but when you examine it carefully, in depth there is something else happening, and that is the truth. So what you are expected to do is now prepare the mind so that you will be able to perform the task of seeing through a thing, the realistic aspect of things. And Buddha has revealed that the realistic aspect of things in the world, all component things are impermanent, unsatisfactory and subject to constant change. No is soulless. Just the opposite of these three truths we see outwardly as a worldling that is permanent, satisfactory and no change at all. No change takes place in anything. Everything is permanent, everything is satisfactory and there is no change at all. That is what you observe in the normal life, undeveloped mind. But the developed mind can see through things and realize the true state of things in reality, and that is, yes, everything is subject to constant change, impermanent. And when something is constantly changing, there's nothing substantial or satisfactory in that. And when something is constantly changing, there is no permanent display of anything. It's all a change going on. No soul as such. No continuity as such. Therefore, Buddha, having realized the truth, in the discourse he delivered to you about your salvation or gaining your liberation from the cycle of birth, and that is the four foundations of mindfulness, which is the only discourse he gave where he gave you a promise that if you practice as instructed by him, in that discourse you will be able to gain your liberation within 7 days. Failing which, the longest it would take would be about 7 years. Not that these two are deadlines, so to say, demarcations. No, within that period, any one of you, if you make an effort, can gain your liberation. And in that discourse which he gave us, pertaining to our liberation, he first dealt with the development of the mind through concentration. And he chose a very, very common topic, a very common subject to you and I, an act which you always commit, and that is breathing. That's an act which you always commit. Normally, activities are committed as directed by the mind. The body performs those activities. But this is a special incident where the act of breathing is not done by the mind, or the mind has any connection to that act of breathing. Is completely a bodily act committed by the body. You may think of many things, you may plan things, but still your breathing goes on, uninterrupted, because that's a bodily act, whereas your mind, of course, it creates thoughts. The creation of thoughts, or mindfully doing an act like any other act which you commit with your body, is not what you are doing at the time when you are breathing. It's a bodily act, just goes on. Therefore, you see that the mind is completely out of this activity. That's something which you must bear in mind. Your mind has nothing to do with this activity of breathing. It goes on, it goes on. Therefore, you are in a position to, at a point which you may select, where you can observe this breathing going in and breathing coming out of the nostrils. This mind from outside can watch that clearly. Or it can fix itself at any point along the path where the breathing follows, you see, and then watch what is happening there. That every one of us can do. The question is why you can't maintain that for some time. Once you fix your mind at a point, why you can't maintain it? Because you have been given this freedom to the body to commit this bodily act without the mind and allowed the mind to wander about very freely. The mind has created this bad habit of wandering freely without any control on your part. And when you make the mind to fix itself at a point along the path where you bear the breathing goes on and make the mind to observe the act of breathing, then that is something which the mind is not used to. It's freedom of movement. You are going to completely check now. Don't go here and there now. You stay at this point and watch the breathing in and out. Mind is in the habit of always searching for objects to create thoughts. So what it does is, when you fix the mind at one point, it will bear for a fraction of a second and goes on performing the activities which is used to. Thoughts are created. Often thoughts are created on two alternatives. Thoughts are created either connected with attachment, or thoughts are created connected with aversion. If you are a person who is too attached, then most of the thoughts are connected with attachment. And if you are of the opposite side, most of your thoughts are connected with aversion. That's the trend. There may be persons who are not very keen about creation, who such thoughts connect with the two extremes. Maybe few. It may be that such few may be those who have practiced this meditation in their previous births and they have some control over the mind. Whereas a normal person, he has no control over the mind. And what happens is, when he fixes the mind at one point, in order to watch the breathing in and out, thoughts occur and the mind is completely drifted away from the object and you are thinking of something when you are expected to keep the mind there. This is what happens. And it is too, appease the mind in falling into the two extremes of either pursuing something which it likes or pursuing something which it does not like in the way of creating aversion, that we make you to practice these two meditations, like analyzing the components of the body as impurities and also spreading loving kindness. Body is the most attractive thing to you and you are attached to the body. Therefore, we make you to think of the impurities of the body in order to object to separate the mind from the body. Body and the mind are always together. And that's how we lived in the past. As long as the body is with the mind, there is constant obstruction to the mind being mind fixing itself at one point. The distraction is always there. Therefore, we create a realistic picture of the body to the mind so that the mind can release the attachment to the body. And with regard to animosity, normally you are a very hot-tempered person, or slight incident may create a certain aversion in your mind. Such persons, we say, spread loving-kindness. Actually, these are two meditations, even Buddha refers to, are very vital for a person to practice in order to lay down the base on which you are going to start your concentration. These two things must be done. Few minutes, about 20-25 minutes on the impurities of the body. Then after that, second subject, spreading loving kindness, about 20-25 minutes. Then your mind is settled. And when the mind is settled, then you bring the mind and fix it at a point where you can observe the breathing carefully. It's a simple process. You must not do any change to the breathing. It's a normal breathing. Also, you must, merely because you feel that it is a bit too soft, that you want to make it a little more conspicuous in the way of breathing hard, don't try to do any changes like that. Very often when the body is not active, there will be subtleness in the breathing. But still you can observe the breathing. Though it's a bodily act, the sensations of that act can be felt by the mind, and you know whether you are breathing in or breathing out. Therefore, fix the mind that way. A certain amount of effort is necessary. If you ask me the question, this development of concentration, is it more difficult than the development of insight knowledge? I would say that this is a little difficult, this beginning, because this is something we have practically done, in the way of breathing in and out. And we have given the mind so much of freedom that we have at no stage, unless of course your past experience may be there, of trying to concentrate the mind at one point. Otherwise, we have never restricted the movement of the mind. Complete freedom has been given to the mind. Under those circumstances, when you start your breathing exercise, trying to fix the mind at one point, the mind always protests against that activity. It doesn't like fixing it at one point. Therefore, it tends to run away from that point. First opportunity it gets, you find the mind drifting from that point. But bear in mind, you had a very well-balanced, concentrated mind at the very inception. Therefore, concentration is nothing unusual to the mind. But the habit you have created in permitting the mind that freedom to move about freely is so strong now that at the very start, fixing the mind at one point will be rather difficult for you. But try. When it goes astray without your knowledge, bring it back. Fix it at one point. And go on performing the exercise. In this exercise too, brothers and sisters, bear in mind, mindfulness is very essential. Mindfulness is very essential. It is that one quality that will help you to fix your concentration well. That is why we introduce this exercise, walking exercise, prior to sitting down somewhere to concentrate. Because that builds up the mindfulness. Why is mindfulness essential? Because we have been living a life without mindfulness. And in this instance too, if you fix your mind and be without mindfulness, you have permitted the mind the freedom to get about in the way it likes. But if you fix your mind and then fix it with the mindfulness, always mindful about that point, always mindful about that point, never be absent-minded about that point, thereby giving a chance for the mind to run away, then that mindfulness fixed the mind at that point. That is why to those people who find difficult to concentrate, we always instruct them to pace up and down very slowly. Just not pacing, but watching the movement of the act committed by the two legs in the way of alternatively pacing. Every movement of the two legs is watched carefully by the mind, and that's training in mindfulness. And once you, even doing that, you see, after some time you find the mind, you becoming absent-minded, the mind runs to some point somewhere else. This absent-mindedness is the thing that made the mind to run away from the point of which you have fixed it. If you are mindful, you would have fixed the mind there right through, without allowing the mind to scatter about. Therefore, mindfulness is a very, very essential thing, even in the breathing exercise. And to develop mindfulness, we always say, just don't go and sit the beginners and try to practice it breathing exercise, but fix the mind and to live mindfully and to encourage mindfulness, you walk up and down for about 10-15 minutes, those beginners, and then after that you quietly, mindfully sit down and then start fixing the mind at one point and then develop your one-pointedness. Very often we are asked the question, what is the purpose in building up one-pointedness? I think at the beginning of the discourse I explained to you that any power which is scattered hasn't the strength it can create when it is concentrated. A scattered thing is power also scattered. But if the force is concentrated at one point, then it creates the maximum energy there. The mind, as I told you, has helped you to live this life unmindfully. You commit acts on your own, the mind commits acts on its own, and you have lived this scattered life right through. Because there is no necessity for one to have so much of mindfulness and fixed concentration for this living he experiences. He sees something which appears before his eye, not worried. What is he accepts. He hears something with his ears, what he hears he accepts. And also in regard to other sense bases which he performs, he accepts things as they are, without probing into any of those objects which attract the sense bases, in order to satisfy yourself whether there is substantial, anything substantial in that object. What you are hunting for as a worldling is temporary enjoyment, something to make you pleasant and happy. Therefore there is no necessity for one to probe into anything in depth. You live on the surface and then be contented with what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you experience through the six sense bases. That's your life. But this philosophy taught by Buddha is something quite different to that sort of life. If you want to know the truth, the reality of life, then you have to develop your wisdom to understand its reality. Therefore, the basic need in such an activity is to develop a powerful mind, because this is the instrument which will help you to understand the realities of life and also understand truly who you are. As it is as a worldling, you have no knowledge about yourself, except that your sense bases have made you to have an idea about yourself from outside, and the thought thinking process has created thoughts, always trying to satisfy the needs, your needs, and that is satisfaction, enjoyment, present sensation, searching for those things. That is the outlook, that is the outcome, and that is the purpose of your six sense bases. They are for you to make the best out of what they bring to your notice in the way of objects attract the sense bases, and out of those create that cheer and happiness and contentment. You are not worried whether the objects that has attracted the sense bases are realistic objects, or is it that they are just a delusion created by the mind. According to the philosophy preached by Buddha, they are all creations by the mind. You accepted that. And you are pursuing to observe it yourself. And the only instrument available for you to observe these deceptions carefully and understand the true nature of yourself is your mind. And this mind as it is living in a worldly way. Blunt, hasn't that sharpness to go deep into a thing. Satisfied with whatever that is shown on the surface. Therefore we are creating a mind now, or developing a mind now, which has the ability to show you the true nature of things. That is the crux of everything. True nature of things. What is the true nature of anything? That it is impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. That is what Buddha has revealed to the world. And most of it has been now approved by science, that everything is impermanent in this world. There is nothing in this world that exists a fraction of a second in one condition. So we are pursuing a philosophy about which we cannot create any doubt at all. Why? Because it is an accepted thing in the world. Even through the developed science, they have proved that what Buddha said was true. Now, having that truth on one side, and in your daily life, you are practicing something quite opposite to that truth. Now you have realized yourself that you are living in deception. Therefore, you are now making your mind, sharpening your mind, in order to realistically understand the true nature of things. And the true nature of things that you are going to realize through the mind you possess, or through the consciousness you possess, is that everything in this world is impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. Your ordinary mind will not show you this, because it believes in something opposite to that, permanent, satisfactory and with soul, continuous in the same condition, which is not true. Therefore, you make an effort to concentrate and build that concentration on the level of the fourth absorption. Another question that he often asked is, what is the use of absorption? We can fix the mind in concentration, and with that concentrated mind we can see the truth. Bear in mind, brothers and sisters, when you direct a force to one-pointedness, certainly it will gather momentum and it will develop that concentration vertically upwards. Imagine you are now directing this force, mental force, vertically upwards as a result of concentration. The more you develop, the better the concentration will be, and the vertical development of the mind upward will be more and more conspicuously observed by you. And what happens? This vertical development of the mind, if it is not checked properly by you, brought under control by you, it has a tendency to reach regions when this mental force will be completely out of contact by you. No thoughts occur, no contact by you, and it can be in that region for some time and come back normal again. What is the use of a development of that nature? We are only sharpening the mind in order to make use of this power, to realistically understand the true nature of things, that is impermanent, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness. That is all we want. Therefore, we do not want this mind to go into regions and conceal itself without you being able to contact the mind and make use of it for any purpose. Till such time it on its own comes down to normal condition. Therefore, we have controls. This absorption is a control. First, when the vertical development of the mind reaches the first stage, it's the first absorption. When it reaches the second stage, it's the second absorption. When it reaches the third stage, it's the third absorption. When it reaches the fourth stage, the fourth absorption. These are controls. And once they are controlled by you, your mind controlled by you in that manner, fixing the absorptions, that mind cannot enter any region where it will be out of your control. The mind is fully under your control, and you will lead the mind right up to those points only, nothing beyond that. And Buddha has found that your mind couldn't be developed up to the fourth absorption level. It has gathered a very, very good power of concentration, sufficient to pierce through what is found on the surface and truly understand the true nature of things. That is the object of our developing absorption. Bear in mind, Buddha is born to this world not to display magic, not to create situations which are abnormal with the mind. We don't want that. His sole object is to guide you along a path where you will gain your liberation from this cycle of birth. Because the cycle of birth has brought in untold misery to you, and you are subject to constant suffering. In order to release you from this suffering, he has taught us a philosophy, the base of which is the development of the mind to a high degree, so that the realistic aspect of things in the world can be understood clearly by you. That is the object of the development of the mind. Then one would ask the question, should it go up to the fourth absorption? Yes. After when the mind reaches the fourth absorption, it has reached a very, very high level of sharpness, thereby creating the ability to go deep into a thing, to understand something not found at the surface but in depth. That is why he has fixed the fourth absorption as the point one would develop the mind to. There will be the first absorption, second absorption, third absorption and the fourth absorption. Mind, if consciousness is supposed to be a conjurer, it can create lot of things for you. In the same way, these absorptions, when fully developed, can give you some results of that nature. But that is not our outlook. Our outlook is to gain our liberation. Our outlook is to escape from this cycle of birth by gaining Nibbana. Therefore, we are not concerned with the magic it can show. We are not concerned with the special psychic powers it can bring about. We are only concerned with the strength it can bring about by concentration, so that that concentrated mind can be directed to show you the true nature of things, to realistically understand who you are. There is also another point which one must remember. Now you develop your mind up to the fourth absorption, And that is the result of an effort by you, an exercise practiced by you. Like any other exercise when you practice, there is aim in the practice, you see, to reach certain heights. In that aspect, in this aspect, what you are doing is you are training the mind in practicing an exercise so that you make the mind to reach the maximum height so that it could be of immense benefit to you. Therefore, this is a practice, this is an exercise. You need not be a Buddhist to practice concentration. Even a Muslim can practice concentration, a Christian can practice concentration. It is just an exercise. Bear that in mind, please. And only patience is necessary. Application is necessary. Perseverance is necessary in getting the maximum out of this exercise, because after all, you have allowed this mind free play, allowed to scatter about in any manner it wishes. Now you are asking the mind to fix itself at one point and then develop its concentration. It would not like that interference by you in interfering with this freedom of the mind in moving about in the manner it wishes. And that's a strong habit in the mind you have created now. You are trying to break that habit. That's the essential thing. Break the habit of its scattering nature and fix another habit in the mind to fix it at one point and make it to go vertically upwards, developing itself to high degree. Therefore, breaking habit, there is always an inner protest by the mind. I don't want to stay at one point. But you quietly, patiently get the mind to be fixed at one point and develop it with patience, perseverance. Then at a certain stage the mind will give in to you, because you have broken the forceful, very powerful habit it has created in the way of scattering about. And in the breaking of that habit, I again emphasize that mindfulness has helped you immensely. Though you cannot make out that mindfulness has played such an important role, but if you carefully analyze how you fixed your mind that at one point in order to build up your concentration, it is the mindfulness that helped you to fix it at one point. If you absent-minded, that mind would not have been fixed at that point, it would have been scattering all over without your knowledge. But the mindfulness helped you in that too. Therefore, mindfulness plays a vital role in this. Now we have the developed mind. Let us say we have developed our mind to the fourth absorption level. Then we have a developed mind now. We have that amount of patience developed in us now that we can fix our mind at an object and go looking at that object for some time, so that we could pierce the surface appearance and go into the thing and see what is happening inside. That ability we have developed. How does this ability which you have developed through concentration helps your attainment? That's the essential thing. Attainment is going along the path shown by Buddha, and that is the path, the eightfold path, which will bring about in you the getting rid of defilements and then realizing the true nature of things when the mind has reached a certain height of development. In the path of development in wisdom, in the path of development in knowing the true nature of things, you have the first stage as stream entry, second stage as once returner, third stage of development as non-returner, and the fourth stage of development as the reaching of the stage of arahathood. In these four stages, brothers and sisters, this concentrated mind is helping you to get rid of certain powerful bondages. I will use that word, that is the most descriptive word which I can use, so that you are bound to this life by these 10 fetters. And you are made to release yourself from these fetters through the development of the mind in your wisdom. And what are you making use of to create that wisdom in you to get rid of these fetters? Concentration. This concentrated mind gives you all the requirements to break the fetters. Your fetters are your normal behavior of mind as a worldling, powerfully controlled by habit, powerfully controlled by the habit. Habit is a manner of behavior in the mind resulting from constantly doing a certain thing in the same manner, and the mind getting used to it so much that automatically the mind goes along that line of activity and perform that act without even your awareness. That is the habit. So your habits are strong, so strong that these 10 fetters are binding you to this life without any effort on your part, because your habits are creating that situation for you. Now bear in mind, a habit that is created in the mind and strongly tied down to that habit, do you think a mind that has not been developed to high degree can ever break that habit? After all, if your mind is an ordinary mind, it is a mind that is accepting the ordinary behavior. And this ordinary behavior is nothing but the development of certain habits in your mind. Not by one birth, not by two births, by hundreds and hundreds of births you have treated this mind in this manner, and the mind has behaved in that manner habitually. Now it needs a certain amount of powerful force to keep away from that habit and break that habit and see the realistic aspect of things. And the habit that you have powerfully created in this world is satisfactory, that there is continuity, no change at all. That is the vision you have created in the mind as a result of this habitual conduct of yours. And to break that habit and make you to feel the realistic aspect of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness, how much of power is necessary. Bear that in mind. How do you get that power? As a result of the concentration which you practiced earlier. It's just not the ordinary mind now reacting against this false delusion created in the mind of permanency and satisfaction and continuity. There's a powerful mind that has gone to a very high degree and who has acquired the ability to go deep into any matter. It is that mind that you are making use of to see the truth. Then what happens? Of course you have now prepared the mind that way now with concentration. Your mind is sharp now. When required to concentrate about a certain thing, it has that ability now built up by you. In the exercise you performed earlier in building concentration. Now the mind has that ability. It had that ability originally. It was a scattered mind. Now it's a concentrated mind. You have prepared that mind that way. Now when it comes to a question of looking deep into the realistic aspect of life, first thing that you see is, what is this life which we are leading? There is this body and there is this mind. And that is something which you must very, very carefully observe and understand. And your sharp mind then clearly shows you that this is the body and this is the mind. This body cannot do anything without a direction by the mind. You see that clearly. The body is just a mass of elements and nothing else, constantly fed and maintained. This is span of my existence is over. But there is a mind that is directing the body in everything. Now when you see that aspect, brothers and sisters, that it is the mind that is directing this body and that there is no person as such in you who is committing these acts, what a big change that can bring about in you, in a person who always believed in a being in you. For this, something very wonderful. I always thought that I had somebody in me who is directing my, co-controlling my activities. But in this instance, when I probe deep into this activity of myself, I clearly see the mind on one side, I clearly see the body on the other side. This body by itself cannot perform anything without the direction by the mind. Ah, these are two things. Two clear things on either side depending on each other. And then that is further convincing to you once you start looking at the activities itself. What are these activities? Performed by cause and effect and nothing else. There is no creator or power from outside who is directing you to commit these acts. But you automatically react to the cause and effect. And that convinces you more that there is no person in you as such except that all your activities are causally created. What a big jump in your life. What a big realization. You have knocked out that foolish impression you have created, and that created by the mind itself, that there is a being in you. A very, very important step you have taken to realize this. Now you will practice the other aspect, that everything is subject to constant change. That is also reality which you have now accepted. Go on observing the body and the mind carefully. Yes, the mind cannot stick to one point, fraction of a second, constantly change. That's quite conspicuous to us. The body, that also, arising and passing away, every activity, every thought created in you, everything is arising and passing away, arising and passing away, arising and passing away, arising and passing away. And what does that convince you? Impermanence. The first reality Buddha revealed to you, impermanence. Everything is impermanent in this world. That has been convincingly proved to you that there is nothing permanent in this world, everything is impermanent in this world, everything is subject to constant change. Now when that realization dawns to you up to a degree, not fully, up to a degree, you find that the concentration you have practiced previously in your exercise, breathing exercise, helps you in that. How? To put your mind in the realization of that truth to a higher degree, when the full realization befitting that development you are expecting in the way of stream entry reaches its zenith, you see it, impermanence to that degree which in keeping with the development it has occurred in you. And that is the fruition of your first development. That fruition reaches a high degree. Fruition of any of the four stages does not take place in ordinary mind in a scattered manner. It reaches a high degree, and that degree which it reaches is as a result of the sharpness you have created in the mind in your earlier practice of the breathing exercise. This samadhi, that samadhi helps you to develop the fruition samadhi. One would ask the question, why should we realize the truth in that manner? Why can't, when we see something really seen, now we have gone to such an extent, why it does not, it just occur? No, it doesn't occur like that. Then I will give you something in depth. There was a person called Tapusya who came to see Buddha. Tapusya asked the question, Venerable Sir, all your bhikkhus are very solemn, peaceful in their appearance, calm, quiet. Is it that they have pitched their mind to a higher level than the ordinary, normal working level, that they are in that condition of mind? Buddha said, Tapusya, I also thought so some time ago. Then what I did was, I pitched my mind to the first absorption level. I could not get rid of perception and feeling. These are two mental factors of the five which create a thought. These are two mental factors. There are five mental factors which help you to create a thought. They are contact, feeling, perception, volition, and attention. Of the five mental factors, these two mental factors, feeling and perception, I could not get rid of. Now Buddha has given clear examples to indicate the values of these five mental factors. He compared the mental factor feeling to a bubble. When a drop of rain falls in the water, there is a bubble created. It just arises and passing away, that's all. And he compared the mental factor perception to a mirage. During daytime when you're walking along the road, you see ahead of you a stretch of water, quite visible to you. But when you go there, you find that it is not there. It is again observed a distance away from you. A complete deception. Therefore, mental factor feeling is a bubble, is impermanent thing, and the mental factor perception is always misdirecting you, creating something which is not correct. So one could ask the question, could Nibbana, which is a very, very true state, a condition which we are all aspiring to achieve, which will ultimately end our cycle of birth and all our suffering? Will a quality like feeling and perception be present in a mind which gives way to the dawning of wisdom and the attainment of Nibbana? Now, these are two worldly qualities. Both qualities are deceptive. Then Buddha said, in the first absorption I could not get rid of them. In the second absorption I could not get rid of them. In the third absorption I could not get rid of them. Those are the absorptions pertaining to the form. Form world. Then I got into the formless, boundless sky, boundless consciousness, void, perception, non-perception. There are two. Still these two qualities of the mind persisted. Then after that, I picked my mind to a higher level than that. And it is at that level of getting rid of non-perception and non-perception and entering a very, very clear state of mind where you have cut off completely from activity of the world. Sanya Vedita Nirodha Samapatti. Nirodha Samapatti. Where I have created cessation of everything temporarily. Body reacts and mental conditions, all the cessation has been created and is a blissful state of the mind. And it is that state that I managed to get rid of the feelings and perceptions. Therefore, we can come to the reasonable conclusion that every fruition samadhi of yours, whether it be the stream entry, whether it be the first return, once returner, whether it be the non-returner state, whether it be the final arahat stage, your mind reaches to that height. When it reaches a very, very clear stage and the realization dawns to you. Now in your stream mentality stage, there are a lot of other defilements that you have to get rid of. Therefore the mind does not stay there more than a fraction of a second. It comes down. But the fruition of samadhi carries you there. Very few know that. That is why your fruition samadhi always occurs you in a state of developed state of the mind. Fraction of a second it goes up there and it comes down. All fruition samadhis of the stream entry, once returner, non-returner and the final arahatthood, always fruition stage, it goes up to a very high level and the fruition takes place, and of course with the arahat of course it remains at that, in Nibbana. And that is a clear indication how your fruition development in the mind takes place. And it's also a clear indication that in the fruition stage of the mind, a higher development must occur in you, not just the ordinary mind that gives you that realization. Therefore, brothers and sisters, don't think that samadhi is not necessary. I can go further into these things, that is, I'm taking your time. But you need some idea to make up your mind so that you can make a better effort in developing a samadhi. As I told you always, there are two types of samadhi. Samadhi developed through concentration. And there are other cases where, as a result of previous experience in previous births, they built up a samadhi called a khanika samadhi. Such persons need not practice this concentration on the breathing. Because once they get into concentration on the realistic aspect of life, anicca, dukkha, anatta, you find that samadhi develops and it catches this trend of thinking and carries you to the level when the realization can take place. It comes back again. In that khanika samadhi, there is no first absorption, second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. It's an automatic process that goes on and your mind is taken to a higher region. And the realization dawns to you and it comes down again. That's called the khanika samadhi. But to summarize the attainment, all attainments must be as a result of a development of the mind to a high degree, not at the stage of your normal condition of mind. Therefore, make an effort. I will deal with this subject further in regard to the intricacies of the development of samadhi and matters which you must be careful about, so that you would be doing just the right thing and developing your mind. Mind is now habitually brought down to a very low level as a result of your this worldly life. Very low level. This is a very, very low level. It has no power of piercing into a thing and understanding something in depth. No power. Now you are bringing that mind of that level to a level like this. Of course. You are not remaining in that level right through, but once you have developed that ability in the mind, then you, in your normal functioning, you can come down to that low level and function. But when you need the strength to pierce into a thing, then of course the natural development takes place in you when it reaches to a higher level and the realization dawns to you. Those two things you must carefully bear in mind. It's not your normal mind that brings about a realization of the truth. Truth is something found in depth, not found on the surface. What is found on the surface is completely deception. What you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you think, and what you contact are all deception and nothing else. Those are things which you have habitually gathered in order to continue this life in this world and the birth to come. But if you are going to get out of this cycle of birth, which is very powerful, which very few can escape from, which one is normally dragged into by sort of force of habit, then you have to build up that mind to match that situation so that it can give a good fight to this delusion that is pushing you to the worldly way. And then realistically understand the true nature of things and adapt yourself to accept the truth as truth and not be deceived by delusion. Therefore, brothers and sisters, it's quite a pleasant thing to do if you practice your absorptions well, to get into absorptions once in the morning. It's just something which won't take more than 5-10 minutes. You can go to the first absorption, you can go to the second absorption, you can go to the third absorption, you can go to the fourth absorption and come down. Even coming down, when you practice it so much that at the fourth day you can just forget about it, then automatically the mind comes down to normal condition. There is no effort necessary. You can go to the fourth absorption and get up and go away. When you do your normal work, it automatically has come down to the normal condition of functioning. But to beginners, we say, no, bring it down. They must get used to the way of bringing it down. When the path is clearly made out, then that is an automatic incident. You can get into fourth absorption and get up and go away. But while you are at the normal job, your mind has come down to normal condition, there are no absorptions now in that mind. That is how you train the mind. When you train the mind that way, that is a normal thing. It is nothing extraordinary. And you will enjoy it. To be in the second, even arahats get into the second absorption when they have to spend their leisure peacefully existing. And when they want to go deep into a thing, they get to the fourth absorption and then probe into matters which they like to probe. Therefore, brothers and sisters, these are requirements. After all, we are not doing something in keeping with the ordinary existence. We are trying to reach a very, very specific stage of development, which development is much above the level of the ordinary being. And get out of this cycle of birth once for all. Thank you. I shall no longer enter this cycle of birth. I am leaving you. And forever you are at rest. You are at peace. But if you don't want that peace, get back to the normal way of existence and you can go through life as you are going on now. Therefore, brothers and sisters, practice this. There is nothing difficult about it. But to people who have some previous experience, bring about quick results. But those who had no such, you are introducing a new lesson to the mind, new exercise, the mind will of course resist as much as possible before it subdues itself before your command. You see? But every one of you can practice this concentration and develop the first, second, third and the fourth absorptions. And may you all develop these absorptions. May you all be efficient in your development of the absorptions. May you develop that sharpness, that clarity in the mind to understand the true nature of things as Buddha revealed and gain your final liberation in attaining Nibbana. Thank you.